Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 21st. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MISD Board OKs Travis Expansion. Officials, Idea Public Schools to Pay for High School Facilities, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland ISD School Board approved the expansion of Idea Travis Academy. The vote was 4-2 in favor of the expansion, Tommy Bishop and Michael Booker voting against. Earlier in the meeting, 14 of the 15 people speaking on the issue during the public comment period spoke in favor of Idea Travis's expansion beyond the 8th grade and into 9th through 12th grades. As an in-district partner, Idea Travis needed the board to approve expansion into the higher secondary grades before signing off on plans to start a secondary campus. School officials stated that high school facilities would be paid by Idea Public Schools, not the Midland ISD taxpayer, and allow for around 400 higher-quality high school seats at a time when Midland ISD officials state they are expecting overcrowding issues on its campuses. Currently, Idea Travis is a kindergarten through 8th grade school in southeast Midland. Idea Public Schools took over the campus a little more than 2 years ago, taking one of the worst-performing campuses in the state and turning it into a B-graded campus. Idea Travis, according to the district, had the greatest improvement of any MISD school when Texas Education Agency grades were announced in August, improving 38 points compared to its grade in 2019. Board member Rick Davis added that Idea Travis's 7th graders were among the highest performing 7th graders in MISD, specifically the second highest performing 7th graders in reading and the highest performing in math. This decision should be guided by the academic success of Idea Travis for our MISD students, Davis said. And what a success story it is. School Board President Brian Murray said approving expansion was about doing what's best for MISD students. He also added that the agreement between the two entities keeps students with Midland ISD and protects the taxpayer. Both Murray and Davis addressed IDEA's public school's response to financial malpractice by former employees and that it appeared to be isolated to people no longer with IDEA Public Schools. The good thing is, none of that affected education and academics in Midland, or Idea Travis, Murray said. And so we will continue to do what's best for our kids across the district and see how we can go to work and make that happen. This article is entitled, MISD Names Acting Leader. Murray, Dixon, to help search group find new permanent superintendent before January 4th. By Stuart Doreen. The Midland ISD Board picked an acting superintendent Monday at its monthly meeting. She is Kelly Spencer, the district's chief operating officer. The school board also picked the search firm that will help find MISD's next permanent superintendent. That firm is Walsh Gallegos. Helping to conduct the search will be Ann Dixon, who previously served as interim superintendent for Midland ISD in the fall-winter of 2020-21. That was the tandem which found now outgoing superintendent Angelica Ramsey. Midland ISD Board President Brian Murray said early Tuesday morning that the district can form the job posting and that Dixon can meet with the community and go down a similar path to 2020. Luckily, she's been here recently, Murray said, and so she'll have a lot of that information and know a lot of the players in Midland. Murray said the superintendent search timeline gives the new board, following the November 8th elections, the opportunity to interview and decide on a lone finalist. Our real goal is to have a sitting superintendent when our kids and our teachers come back from holiday break January 4th for the spring semester, Murray said. The timeline is ambitious, and I think that we have a good job, and we have good people, and we're obviously on that upswing. So it's a job that people are going to want to come for, and so I think we can do that. Murray said he's been talking to Dixon for the past few weeks, and she said there are candidates calling her about their interest in Midland ISD. I do think it's a job that people will be interested in, Murray said. As for Spencer, she has been with the district since July 2020. The item approved late Monday, early Tuesday, calls for a supplemental duty agreement to be worked out with her. The Midland ISD board also agreed to formally accept the resignation of now former Superintendent Angelica Ramsey when provided. Ramsey is leaving Midland ISD to take the superintendent's position at Fort Worth ISD. This article is entitled, Judge, Gun Ban for Felony Defendants Unconstitutional. Counts. No longer can courts balance away a constitutional right. From the Associated Press. Pecos. A U.S. law banning those under felony indictment from buying guns is unconstitutional, a federal judge in West Texas ruled Monday. U.S. District Judge David Counts, whom then-President Donald Trump appointed to the federal bench, dismissed a federal indictment against Jose Gomez Quiroz that had charged him under the federal ban. According to Counts' ruling, Quiroz was under a state burglary indictment when he tried to buy a .22-caliber semi-automatic handgun and challenged the ensuing federal charge. In a 25-page opinion filed in Pecos, Counts acknowledged this case's real-world consequences. Certainly valid public policy and safety concerns exist. However, he said a U.S. Supreme Court ruling this summer in a challenge brought by the New York Rifle and Pistol Association framed those concerns solely as a historical analysis. Although not exhaustive, the court's historical survey finds little evidence that the federal ban, which prohibits those under felony indictment from obtaining a firearm, aligns with this nation's historical tradition. Hence, he ruled the ban unconstitutional, as the Second Amendment is not a second-class right, as noted in a 2008 Supreme Court ruling. No longer can courts balance away a constitutional right, Counts wrote. After the New York case, the government must prove that laws regulating conduct covered by the Second Amendment's plain text align with this nation's historical tradition. The government does not meet that burden. In the New York case, the High Court held by a 6-3 vote, with conservative justices forming the majority, that Americans have the right to carry firearms in public for self-defense. The June 23rd ruling, written by Justice Clarence Thomas, was seen then as likely to lead to more people being legally armed. A message to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Texas did not immediately return a message seeking comment. This article is entitled, President, MC Receives Interest in Aviation Maintenance Program, by Ben Schaffer. The Midland College Board of Trustees held its monthly meeting Tuesday afternoon to discuss the renovation of campus buildings, the reopening of the Aviation Maintenance Technician Program, and review campus safety measures. In August, the board approved a conditional reopening of the Aviation Maintenance Technician Program, which grants graduates qualification to work on aircraft systems and components. Midland College President Steve Thomas shared updates of the progress and interest the program has garnered. He shared a few ways that the college is advertising the program, beginning instruction in January of next year. Starting with the advisory committee that we talked about, it's so important to the future of this program, making sure that we have support from the advisory committee, he said. Thomas said that the college has identified around 30 potential advisory committee members for the program from the community and companies, but they will narrow that number down to 10 or 12. A lot of interest from all these folks that indicated that they would be interested in being a part of this, he said. The college has also scheduled an open house at the college's hangar on October 3rd. They're advertising the program on the radio throughout October and will begin writing editorials on the program in the Reporter-Telegram. The college will also send direct mail promotions to MIST seniors. Thomas said that 13 students at Midland's Air Show indicated interest in the program, and 12 students at the Fly Into Fall event at Air Park did as well. Since the college officially released the news of the program's reopening, they've received 7 additional inquiries from potential aviation students, Thomas said. It looks like we might be able to meet that threshold of 12 students to start the program in January. The board also approved the construction and renovation of Jack E. Brown Dining Hall. The college opened bids last week for contractors, and MidTechs of Midland turned in the lowest bid, $3.636 million, to renovate the hall. Ashley Borgstead, interim chief of police for the college, shared a few reminders and updates regarding campus safety. He said Midland College police officers conduct detailed drilling for lockdowns, evacuations, and active shooters. Borgstead also said every MCPD officer recently became trained and certified in active violence response. This article is entitled County, Road Construction to Last Month, by Ben Schaffer. Midland County announced the reconstruction of East County Road 120 Phase 1. According to Midland County, the project will consist of 2 phases of reconstruction. Phase 1A will begin on October 17th and is expected to be completed April 11th. The 2 phases will include complete removal and reconstruction of the driving surface for the limits of construction. This will include introducing drainage ditches on either side of the road and reconstruction driveways and intersections within limits of construction, according to the county. The first phase will cover Rankin Highway to Farm to Market Road 715. Phase 1B will be from FM 715 to Farm to Market 1213. The first phase will impact traffic by only allowing local traffic onto County Road 120, according to the county. The neighborhood south of County Road 120, between Rankin Highway and FM 715, will be diverted south to County Road 130 for access to Rankin Highway, the county said. County Road 1180 will have limited cross traffic from the north and south. This article is entitled ECISD, Police Arrest 8th Grader for Threatening to Shoot Teacher, by Mercedes Cordero. An 8th grade student at Nimitz Middle School was arrested Tuesday for threatening to shoot a teacher, according to Ector County ISD. The student threatened the teacher for stepping in between 2 students who were arguing with each other. The student did not have a weapon, according to the district. He faces a Class A misdemeanor charge of exhibition, use, or threat of exhibition or use of firearm, as well as disciplinary action from the school. The district is asking parents to have conversations with their children to help them understand that reacting in anger, violence, and making threats against others will lead to serious consequences. Our district takes all threats very seriously, investigates them fully, and will file charges against those who make such threats, ECISD said in a statement. Working together, schools and parents can curb this type of behavior. Tuesday's arrest follows several arrests since the start of the school year. On September 14th, ECISD reported that a 5th grade student at Ross Elementary was arrested after making threats against the school. On September 9th, an 8th grade student at Bowie Middle School was arrested after assaulting a teacher. On August 24th, a 7th grade student at Crockett Middle School was charged by ECISD police after he allegedly made a statement about getting a gun and shooting kids. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled "Biden to Release 10 Million Oil Barrels" by Sheila Tobin and Ari Natter, Bloomberg. The Department of Energy will offer additional U.S. reserve crude for sale ahead of plans by the European Union to ban most Russian oil in December. The agency will offer 10 million barrels of low-sulfur crude for supply in November from storage caverns in Texas and Louisiana, according to a press statement. Bids for the supply that will originate from Big Hill and West Hackberry, Louisiana, are due by September 27th. Awards will be made no later than October 7th. West Texas Intermediate Futures briefly paired Monday's modest gains on the news. The government's offer is coming at a time when global benchmark oil prices have retreated to levels seen before Russia's invasion of Ukraine began, as investors heed warnings of a global recession. The declines in oil futures have sent American pump prices tumbling for weeks, a welcome development for the Biden administration as it gears up for midterm elections in November. The timing is also noticeable, as it coincides with the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries discussing the possibility of curbing production. OPEC and its allies agreed to cut output next month by 100,000 barrels a day. The DOE's planned 180 million barrels supply release was originally set over a six-month period that started in May. To date, the SPR sales have resulted in 155 million barrels of crude oil being delivered or committed for delivery through October 22nd. Of the 10 million barrels slated for November delivery, 1 million are being marked for possible export. U.S. refiners Valero Energy Company and Marathon Oil Corporation have been the biggest buyers in the SPR sales so far. This article is entitled "Securities Class Action Against Apache Could Move Forward" from Texas Law Book. Kyra Buckley of the Houston Chronicle contributed to this report. Lawyers for Houston-based Apache Corporation failed to convince a federal magistrate to toss out a proposed securities class action claiming that company leaders misled investors in an announcement of a transformational discovery of a West Texas shale play called Alpine High. U.S. Magistrate Judge Andrew M. Edison of the Southern District of Texas, in an opinion issued last week, recommended that the case move forward because the plaintiff's complaint is sufficiently detailed and specific in its allegations that company officials knew the information they made public in 2016 was, quote, materially false, unquote. Lawyers for Baker Botts, the Houston law firm that represents Apache, are expected to ask U.S. District Judge George Hanks of Houston to reject Edison's recommendation. Groups of investors, led by trustees of the Teamsters Union No. 142 Pension Fund and the Plymouth County, Massachusetts Retirement Association, allege Apache was involved in a, quote, massive fraud centering on an oil and gas field, unquote, in West Texas. Judge Edison, in his memorandum, said the plaintiffs have sufficiently alleged that defendants made materially false or misleading statements. Over my career, both as a lawyer and as a judge, I have had the opportunity to review a vast number of securities class action lawsuits, Edison wrote. Despite their unusual length, many of those filings are cut-and-paste jobs that unquestionably fail to properly allege a false or misleading statement. This is not one of those complaints, Edison wrote. The consolidated class action complaint provides a detailed discussion of the alleged misrepresentation at issue and explains the reasons why defendants allegedly knew at the time they spoke publicly that those statements were materially false. Apache, in court papers, claims that their executives had no intent to mislead, an issue that Edison said is a close call. A spokeswoman for Apache's parent company, APA Corporation, declined to comment. Apache announced the Alpine High discovery with great fanfare in 2016, estimating that that field held 3 billion barrels of oil and 75 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. Alpine High, however, never met expectations, and the company called it quits there in 2020, turning its attention to offshore oil fields off the coast of Suriname in South America. In their complaint, investors claim that Apache endured a prolonged financial slump in the early 2010s, even as the exploration and production industry in Texas capitalized on advances in hydraulic fracturing. Apache allegedly did not make a single notable discovery during the fracking boom, according to court documents. As a direct result, the company's stock price languished. The plaintiffs point to a Houston Chronicle article that said Apache found itself on the outside looking in, and that management knew Apache had to get back its swagger if it was to reverse its fortunes. It had to return to the business of risk, and it had to make a headline-grabbing find. To make a headline-grabbing find, the investors claimed that Apache focused on Alpine High, which is in Reeves County. The energy company announced in September 2016 that Alpine High in Texas was a, quote, transformational discovery, unquote, and, quote, world-class resource play, unquote, with immense production capabilities. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, MISD Board Hard at Work While You Were Sleeping, by Stuart Doreen, staff columnist. It's 1:10 a.m., pitch black, and I'm doing everything I can to avoid getting wet from a set of sprinklers in a field between parking lots at Bowie Fine Arts Academy. The Midland ISD board meeting ended minutes ago, and I just finished talking with Board President Brian Murray about the marathon meeting that the record will show started Monday evening, 5:30 p.m., and ended Tuesday morning. For those interested in education governance, the regular monthly meeting was for you. Around 35 people participated in a public comment period that lasted for more than 90 minutes, and presentations took place on everything from windmills to tax rates to Midland ISD's best Texas Education Agency report card in around two decades. There was plenty of drama, the threat of education partnerships being terminated, the hope of a campus expansion, and even a contract having to do with the district's use of an armored vehicle. Apparently, lunch money adds up on some campuses. Midland ISD renewed the lease it has with the operator of Ranchland Hills Golf Club, an acting superintendent was named, and a search firm was selected to find the district's next permanent superintendent. Many of the votes took place while most Midlanders were already asleep. The few people left watching inside the auditorium at meeting's end were the diehards. Some had a dog in respective fights, like the future of Ben Milam International Academy. God bless those people and the passion they showed on their issue. Or the expansion of Idea Travis. Supporters of each walked out as satisfied as one could be at 1 a.m., victory on this night was theirs. A couple of others were there to offer a pat on the back or handshake to five men and one woman who on this night didn't just go through the motions. When I finally got to my vehicle, I took a moment to gather my thoughts. I didn't remember ever having an event I covered end so late, not even after a game from my days as a sports writer. I also couldn't help but think about those who represented their respective districts during one of the longest meetings I can remember. It is on nights like this that I do feel for those people. Hours after many of their loudest critics left the auditorium and called it a night, they kept on going, trying to make a difference. None of us will ever totally agree with what any one board member does. But the hours elected officials spend grinding away will have my respect. Did they sign up for the job? Yes. Did they sometimes spend thousands of dollars to obtain that position? In many cases, yes. Are they aware that there might be meetings like the one Monday? You bet. But still, they signed up when others didn't. And in basically all cases, other than county government, they make nothing or next to nothing. And on nights like Monday, they basically put in a second shift. And their reward is a couple of handshakes or pats on the back, and the second guessing from others, including yours truly, about what they could have and should have done better. Thank you to all who decided to run for Midland ISD School and Midland City Council this election cycle. You will never be paid back for the commitment you're making. But because you have made the decision to serve, our community is a better place. 6 members of the Midland ISD School Board reminded us of that fact on Monday, or Tuesday. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, September 21st. William Ward Foster. William Bill Foster died on September 18th in Fort Worth. He was born on June 27, 1956 in Houston and spent most of his childhood in Midland. Bill is survived by his wife and devoted caregiver Karen and her 3 sons, his mother Joanne, his brothers John, Iris, and Rick Kathleen, 3 nephews, a niece, and Karen's extended family. He raised 5 stepchildren from a previous marriage and was especially close to his stepson Philip and his step-niece, Paris. He was preceded in death by his grandparents, his father, Dr. John W. Foster Sr., and his aunt and uncle. According to his wishes, any services will be private. Memorials may be directed to Vascular Dementia Society of America, P.O. Box 600, Doylestown, Pennsylvania, 18901, or a charity of choice. Dan Branham. Dan Houston Branham was born at home in Runnels County, Texas, on December 8, 1931. He went to his heavenly reward September 10, 2022. Visitation will be 3 p.m. on Friday, September 23rd, at Bethel Baptist Church in Monahans. A funeral service will be held 10 a.m. on Saturday, September 24th, at Bethel Baptist Church in Monahans. Interment is to follow at 3 p.m. at the Greenwood Cemetery in Midland. He was preceded in death by his wife of 52 years, Wilma Jane Like Branham, and 1 granddaughter, Audrey Denise Branham. He is survived by 5 children, Laura Pulliam of Belton, Linda Brown and husband Jimmy of Temple, Craig Branham and wife Ruth of Grapeland, Eric Branham and wife Linda of Imperial, and Alicia Trujillo of Hobbs. He is also survived by 14 grandchildren and 25 great-grandchildren. Memorial donations may be made to Bethel Baptist Church, a mission-minded church. Arrangements are entrusted to Harkey Funeral Home. If you would like to send your condolences to the family, please do so by signing his guest book at www.harkeyfunerals.com. Freddie Davis Adams. Early Thursday morning on September 15th, Freddie Davis Adams, age 68, was called home by our Heavenly Father. He was born March 19, 1954, to Arthur L. and Cardelia C. Adams. Freddie was preceded in death by his parents, Arthur Lee Adams and Cardelia Adams, and brother Glenn Lee Adams. He leaves to cherish his memory 2 sons, Diedrich Nicole Adams and Camille Adams, 3 grandchildren, 1 brother, Reverend Dr. Luther Wade Henry Mabel of Fort Worth, 4 sisters, Betty Merritt, Shirley Barnes, Carolyn Essicotti, Wanda Ross, and many nieces and nephews. Funeral service will be Thursday, September 22nd at 10 a.m. at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church, 303 East Shandon in Midland. Burial will follow immediately at Fairview Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Joe H. Pais, Jr. Joe H. Paez, Jr., 65, of Midland, passed away peacefully in his home September 18th. He was born February 3, 1957, to the late Jose Paez, Sr. and Margarita Holguin Paez in Midland. Left to cherish his memory will be his children, Robert Paez, Melissa Chandler, Elizabeth Armendariz, Tiffany Jo Paez, and Jesus Paez, as well as 9 grandchildren. Brother Joe Henry Paez and 5 sisters, Anna Stark, Delia Carruth, Lucy Vaez, Alicia Reed, and Corina Bundia. He is preceded in death by his parents, Jose and Margarita Paez. A funeral service will be held Wednesday, September 21st at 1 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Death Notices. Belinda de Leon. Belinda Lucio de Leon, 31, of Midland, passed away September 15th. Viewing will be Thursday, September 22nd, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a celebration of life at 4 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be Friday, September 23rd, at 11 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Chrisian Nicaea Butler. Chrisian Nicaea Butler, 26, of Midland, died September 16th in Midland. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home in Midland. Dinata Yvette Bryant. Dinata Yvette Bryant went to be with the Lord September 12th at the age of 61. Receiving of family and friends will be on Friday, September 23rd from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will take place on Saturday, September 24th at 11 a.m. at Antioch Baptist Church, with Pastor Ronald Van Dyke officiating. Burial will take place on Monday, September 26th at 1 p.m. at Cedar Hill Memorial Park at U.S. 287 Business Highway in Arlington. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Gerald Robert Driver. Gerald Robert Driver, 60, of Odessa, died September 17th in Midland. Memorial services will be held at 1 p.m. September 24th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Pastor Billy Rays is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Mary Pat Blomqvist. Mary Pat Blomqvist, 92, of Midland, passed away September 16th. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, October 1st, at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Wanda Lee Harris. Wanda Lee Harris, 91, of Midland, passed away September 18th. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 24th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 21st. Odessan Guilty of Sexual Assault by Kim Smith. It took an Ector County jury less than 15 minutes Tuesday to convict an Odessa man of sexually assaulting a 16-year-old Odessa girl over the course of several months 3 years ago. The 161st Ector County District Court jury will now have to determine what punishment Joel John Valdez, 27, should receive on two counts of sexual assault of a child. Prosecutors Courtney Williams and Ricky Ernest presented evidence Valdez was convicted of sexual assault in March 2016, and if the jurors believe the evidence, Valdez will receive two mandatory life sentences. If they disbelieve the evidence, the jury can impose a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years on each count. Regardless of what the jury decides, it will be up to retired Judge Tryon Lewis whether the sentences should be concurrent or consecutive. On Monday, the girl testified she was a high school freshman when she met Valdez via Snapchat in August 2019. She said they had sex for the first time the day before she turned 16, and at the time, she believed he was 18. She testified that over the course of the next several months, she would sneak him into her bedroom when her mother was asleep, and he hung out there while her mother was at work and she was at school. The girl told jurors they had unprotected sex nearly every day, even after she found out he was actually a 24-year-old convicted sex offender, because she believed herself in love with him. She only broke up with him after discovering he was cheating on her with another 16-year-old. The girl testified she found out Valdez was married a short time after that, when authorities knocked on her door and informed her his wife had reported their relationship. During closing arguments Tuesday afternoon, defense attorney Philip Wildman acknowledged Valdez and the girl had been involved in a relationship, but said the only person saying they had sexual relations was the girl. He tried to cast doubt on her story, noting she testified she didn't see anything distinctive about Valdez's genitalia, despite the fact his wife testified he had a mole. Williams told jurors the girl did notice something distinctive, the fact Valdez is uncircumcised. She reminded jurors Valdez's wife, Brianna Valdez, also said he was uncircumcised. Brianna Valdez also described the mole as being small and in a location that might go unnoticed in the place where Valdez and the girl had sex, a dark bedroom, alley, and a car. The girl had no reason to lie about their relationship. In fact, she said she was sad, not mad, when she found out he was a sex offender, Williams said. She also wasn't the one who reported their relationship. Williams also urged jurors to remember the testimony of the victim from the 2016 conviction. She told them they can use her testimony and that conviction to judge Valdez's character and prior acts. The now 24-year-old testified that in 2013, Valdez held her down so her 15-year-old boyfriend, his stepbrother, Joshua Lozano, could rape her and then switched places with him so he could rape her too. Both brothers were arrested and Valdez pleaded guilty to sexual assault and placed on 10 years deferred probation. It's unclear what happened to Lozano's case as he was a juvenile at the time. He was currently serving a 5-year prison sentence in an unrelated aggravated sexual assault of a child case. Wildman tried to cast doubt on the 2013 victim's story. He reminded them the 2013 victim never told authorities Valdez actually raped her. She only told them he held her down while his brother raped her. Court documents indicate he pleaded guilty in March 2016 to encouraging his brother to sexually assault her. While the details of the 2013 and 2019 case vary, Williams said that simply means Valdez just got better at sexually assaulting children. He didn't have to hold them down, he just had to tell them he loved them. She asked jurors to remember the testimony of Stephanie Schoen, a licensed professional counselor, who has treated both sex offenders and their victims. Although she didn't know anything about Valdez and the girl, prosecutors called her to the stand to talk about sex offenders and how they pick their victims and groom them for sexual relationships. Williams pointed out Valdez mirrored the actions of someone with hebephilia, a person who is sexually attracted to pubescent children. He selected the girl in the current case because she had low self-esteem and was left on her own much of the time. He isolated her, he flattered her, and he took steps to maintain her infatuation with him, she said. You'd have to do a lot of mental gymnastics in order to believe they weren't having sex, Williams said. He was sneaking into her house, hiding in her closets, posing for pictures in her bed and lying about his age. But don't worry, they didn't have sex, William said sarcastically. The truth is, he picked her. He chose her and he told her he loved her in order to have sex with her, William said. After the jury reached its verdict, the prosecutors called to the stand the woman who they believe unknowingly broke up Valdez and the girl in the current case. Now 19, the woman said she met Valdez through Facebook in April 2020, shortly before turning 17. She testified Valdez reached out to her through Instant Messenger and told her he was an 18-year-old named Xavier. They had unprotected sex the first time they met, and he initiated it, she said. A short time into their relationship, the woman said she was tagged in a photo on Facebook by Brianna Valdez, saying, "Tell your man to come sign these divorce papers." Up until that moment, she said she didn't know Xavier's real name. She didn't know his age, and she didn't know he was married. When she Googled his real name, she learned he had been accused of sexually assaulting another 16-year-old, but he told her it wasn't true and he was fighting the charges, she said. She continued to have a relationship with him even after he was arrested, but eventually broke up with him despite his attempts to keep their relationship going, she testified. Eddie Guerrero, Valdez's probation officer from the 2013 case, testified that even before Brianna Valdez told him Valdez was having sex with underage girls, Valdez was already in trouble for missing sex offender treatment sessions, failing to do his homework, and for falling behind on his fees. Valdez was charged with failure to comply with sex offender registration requirements imposed after the 2013 case, when he absconded after the allegations were made in the current case, Guerrero said. Floyd Gwynn Park Almost Finished by Kim Smith. The $8.5 million upgrade to Floyd Gwynn Park is 90% complete, and the grand opening is slated for the last week of October, said Odessa Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton. Contractors have finished the new playground, three basketball and three volleyball courts, along with two new tennis courts, which includes four pickleball courts, Patton said. The youth pavilions are also in place. All of the major features are in place on the baseball complex, although some leveling still needs to be done, he said. There are a few minor details to finish up in the restrooms and concession stands, and some fencing is going up near the volleyball courts. Contractors are working on the remaining 25% of the irrigation system and the last two sections of the lighted walking trail, Patton said. Although some people are already using the park's facilities, Patton said the park remains closed due to liability issues. The 78-year-old park was the third park built in Odessa, and up until now, few improvements had been made, he said. Once open, Patton said the park will provide much better accommodations for families, and they'll be able to make a lot of new memories. In August 2019, Odessa City Council members voted to take on $93 million in debt for various capital improvement projects, with a portion going toward the renovation project at Floyd Gwynn, the city's second-largest developed park, at 45 acres. Marianne Cedillo, Director of Communications for the city, said the base bid for the project was almost $6 million, but the exact budget for the project is $8,549,200. The project is currently $128,000 under budget, she said. We bid the restroom concession stand building, volleyball courts, basketball courts, and tennis courts as separate projects to incur a cost savings, Cedillo said. Quick hits. Story time. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled story time from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesdays through October 26th in the Children's Department. Call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Sandwich Fundraiser. Andrews EMS, 201 East Broadway Street, Andrews, has scheduled a pulled pork sandwich fundraiser at 11 a.m. today. One sandwich plate is $10 at the door and includes a pulled pork sandwich, chips, and drink. All proceeds will go to Clayton O'Rear, a paramedic with Andrews EMS, who was recently diagnosed with a brain tumor, to aid with medical expenses. To donate without purchasing a plate, call Joe Harper at 432-661-0448. Free STI testing and treatment. Texas Tech Physicians Family Medicine Clinic, 702 West 5th Street, is offering free STI testing and treatment from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesdays. Appointments are not required. Call 432-703-5066. OC provides counseling services through Meta Telehealth Service. Odessa College has the latest institution to partner with Meta, the leading mental health marketplace platform, to provide private counseling services to its students. Students download the Meta app, choose a counselor, and receive chat, video, or voice counseling through the privacy and convenience of their smartphones. The app presents available online counselors for immediate connection, or students can leave a message to schedule a future session. Odessa College students connect with licensed and vetted mental health providers of their choice on Meta, and the students can filter counselors based on their preferences for gender, therapy style, ethnicity, language, and more. OC will cover the costs for a limited number of student sessions. Meta counselors also accept insurance and offer sliding scale pricing. Use of the Meta service is only available to full-time and part-time degree-seeking students. Continuing education, GED, and dual-credit students are not currently eligible for the Meta service at this time. The Meta counselors respond to student messages within hours and are available for sessions morning, days, evenings, and weekends. The counselors also have a stellar reputation with users, carrying an average rating of 4.8 to 5.0. By partnering with Meta, Odessa College receives a robust mental health outreach program, complete with self-service content directed at students and an ongoing awareness campaign encouraging students to take care of their emotional and mental well-being. ECISD, now part of Amazon Future Engineers Expansion. Amazon and Ector County Independent School District announced Tuesday that Amazon is funding computer science education and teacher professional development for 28 elementary schools in the district, impacting more than 14,000 students from the underserved communities and groups currently underrepresented in TAC, as part of its Amazon Future Engineer Program. ECISD is now part of Amazon Future Engineers' target to bring computer science to 500,000 elementary students by 2025. Amazon's commitment to ECISD is part of the company's ongoing efforts to increase access to computer science STEM education across the country, primarily through Amazon Future Engineer. In addition, Amazon has donated more than $20 million to organizations that promote computer science STEM education. Already in Texas, there are more than 550 schools participating in the Amazon Future Engineer program. Amazon is working with BootUp PD, a nonprofit professional development provider specializing in elementary school education, to bring computer science to each school. BootUp PD's typically in-person PD sessions adapt well to a virtual model and provide teachers with the tools they need to bring engaging coding lessons to their students, both on-screen and in-person. High-quality computer science education for elementary school students during their school day is a critical piece of Amazon's childhood to career approach because it helps bridge equity skill gaps at an age when students are just beginning to formulate ideas about their futures. Ector County ISD is grateful to the Amazon Future Engineer Program and BootUp, who will provide support for our teachers to implement computer science education into their classrooms and lessons, stated Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray. Our district strives to prepare Ector County's future workforce to compete in a modern economy, and computer science knowledge is critical to that end. We are excited to see how this will inspire our students. Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, said he is incredibly thankful for the partnership between Amazon and ECISD, which will help close the digital divide in our public schools. Coding is the language of the 21st century, and we must make sure our students don't fall behind. In a rapidly evolving world, Amazon's Future Engineer Program represents a bold investment towards the computer science education of our students, which will ensure they are fully equipped to be tomorrow's innovators and leaders in the STEM field, Landgraf said in the release. Local and state news roundup. Odessan accused of false report. A 911 call about a man threatening another man and his children with a knife and a gun resulted in the caller being arrested on suspicion of false reporting Thursday. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a man named Isaac called 911 on August 29th and said he was walking with his children in the 1300 block of East Century when the man threatened him. He told dispatchers he researched the address of the man and discovered a sex offender lived there. Isaac further stated that if he had to do something about it, he would, because he was loaded, according to the report. He refused to give his address. When officers went to the area, they couldn't find anyone matching the suspect's description and then went to the home of the suspect. The homeowner told officers she suspected Isaac was actually her estranged brother-in-law, Amon Shaker Al-Daraji. She said her sister had come to live with her after separating from Al-Daraji, 31, and her son had once fought him. The homeowner, the son, and the estranged wife all identified the voice of the 911 caller as Al-Daraji. Al-Daraji was arrested on suspicion of false alarm or report, a Class A misdemeanor Thursday. He was released Friday after posting a $1,500 surety bond. Man accused of punching deputy. An Ector County Sheriff's deputy was punched in the face Friday, and the man accused him of hitting him was arrested. According to an ECSO report, deputies were dispatched to Vicksburg Street Friday morning about a disturbance. When they arrived, Rolando Aguilar, Jr., 26, ignored deputies and started to walk inside of the residence. One of the deputies stopped Aguilar, placed his hand on Aguilar's left hand and arm, and told him to calm down so they could talk to him. Aguilar punched the deputy twice in the mouth, causing injuries to his bottom lip and mouth. Aguilar was arrested on suspicion of assault on a peace officer, a Class 2 felony, punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remains in the Ector County Jail on $25,000 surety bond. Police arrest Nimitz student. Ector County ISD police on Tuesday afternoon arrested a Nimitz Middle School 8th grader for threatening to shoot a teacher. The threat came after the teacher stepped between two students who were arguing with each other. The 8th grader, who did not have a weapon, threatened the teacher for stepping between them. The boy now faces a Class A misdemeanor, exhibition, use, or threat of exhibition or use of firearm, and disciplinary action from the school. The release said ECISD takes all threats very seriously, investigates them fully, and will file charges against those who make such threats. District leaders are asking for parents' help to have crucial conversations with their children and make sure their kids understand that reacting in anger, violence, and making threats against others will lead to serious consequences. Working together, schools and parents can curb this type of behavior. Gunman shoots three at Texas Fair before being shot by deputies. Amarillo. A gunman shot three people, including two first responders, at the Tri-State Fair and Rodeo in Texas before he was shot and wounded by sheriff's deputies. Just before 11 p.m. Monday, a man opened fire on Potter County deputies working off duty at the fair in Amarillo. Potter County Sheriff Brian Thomas said. Thomas said the male suspect opened fire on the deputies, striking a deputy and off-duty firefighter, also working at the fair, and a bystander. Deputies returned fire, wounding the suspect. The deputy, firefighter, and bystander were transported to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The gunman was taken to the hospital with injuries that were described as life-threatening. Thomas did not identify any of the victims or the suspect. He did not offer a motive for the shooting, which is being investigated by the Texas Rangers. Amarillo is about 365 miles northwest of Dallas. Council approves ECUD water rate. During a Tuesday work session, the City Council approved the FY22-23 wholesale water rate for the Ector County Utility District. The new rate is a monthly fixed charge of $139,724 plus a volumetric charge of $1.2829 to 1,000 gallons or a comparative rate of $3.83 to 1,000 gallons. The new rate goes into effect October 1st. The prior rate was $3.15 per 1,000 gallons. ECUD's board approved the rate as well. A vote of 5-0 approved the rate with council members Steve Thompson and Denise Swanner absent. The council also discussed proposed changes to the travel policy, and the changes will go on next week's regular council meeting consent agenda. Currently, city rules say the finance committee shall approve in advance all business-related travel by officials, but no such finance committee still exists. As a result, the city changed the rule so that the mayor or mayor pro tem can authorize any such travel. The mayor or mayor pro tem will also be responsible for signing off on expense reports. The change will also raise meal costs per day from $50 to $70 per day. Councilman Steve Thompson brought up the need to amend the travel policy at the council workshop meeting September 6th. He also said he thought it would be appropriate for all city council members and the mayor to notify each other when they are traveling for work purposes. When Mayor Javier Hoven asked Thompson what could be gained from that, he replied, "So I don't have to find out secondhand about Mexico, and when I get challenged on it, I know what I'm talking about." Hoven wanted to know who was challenging Thompson about the trip, and Thompson told him his constituents. "I think it's only fair I know where the mayor is going, or where Detra's going, or Councilmember Swanner," Thompson said, referring to fellow Councilmember Detra White. The mayor said he was asked about the Mexico trip by the Odessa American, and once the Odessa American wrote about his trip, the value of the property went up 4 times. He said he'd been planning on speaking with the council about his trip, and after certain investors had traveled to Odessa. Hoven was apparently referring to the Pan American Ballroom, 2214 East Murphy, which is hosting Reliable Fight Night Pro Boxing in mid-October. However, the August 20th Odessa American story about Hovan's trip did not mention the ballroom at all. The news about the Reliable Fight Night was announced at a press conference August 25th, and it was at that event that Hoven himself announced the ballroom may be the site of 2 other events per month, including professional boxing, amateur boxing, MMA, or wrestling. Ellen Noel hosts opening reception for latest exhibition. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, ENAM, will host an opening reception for its latest exhibition, Spitting Image, Portraits from the Ellen Noel Art Museum's Permanent Collection, from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. September 22nd at their new location on the UT Permian Basin campus in the Presidential Archives, 4919 East University Boulevard. All are welcome to tour the exhibit while enjoying food and drinks. As always, admission is free. This exhibition will focus on the many different types of portraits from our collection. This includes the traditional portrait of an individual, group portraits, or self-portrait. There are methods that are included in the exhibition, including photography, pencil, sculpture, paintings, and more, museum curator Daniel Zeiss said. Spitting Image will feature portraits that have been stored in the museum's vault and recent acquisitions. The most recent, an acquisition by artist Henriette Wyeth Hurd, American, 1907 to 1997. The Tommy Lee Moss from the late 1970s, donated by the estate of Betty Lee Moss on behalf of her children.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.